Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. The Minnesota Vikings in a practice, kind of practice scrimmage, really a joint practice with Jacksonville today. They'll play them on Saturday. We bring into the conversation one of the commentators for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but of course a storied resume as an offensive lineman, number two overall pick back in 95 out of USC. Tony Boselli spent some time with the Jags and spent some time with us tonight. Tony, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Are you in town for this whole foray?
Oh, yeah, I've got practice today and enjoying your beautiful beautiful city and heading out to dinner with some friends who live up here. I love it. You know, as long as I don't have to come back from Super Bowl time when it's so cold, this is a great place to live during this spring, summer, and fall, especially fall, spring, and I mean, summer and fall. It's beautiful up here.
What do you think of their facility?
Can I get one of those? You talk about as a player, having first class, and I'd have loved to have a facility like that. I mean, what a place. I mean, you guys have I'll tell you what, from when I played here, I mean, I played here, but played in the NFL and played up here. You guys have upgraded a little bit. The stadium is a beautiful thing, and that practice facility is about 1,000 times better than the old one they had.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever meet, coming out of SC as tackle like you did in high draft pick, did you ever meet Ron Yeary over the years?
Yeah, I met when I was back at USC. I met Ron a few times.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. Played for the Vikings, of course, for years in the
Hall of
Fame.
Oh yeah, a long time. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just kind of a basic guy, and he knew how to go about his business. But when I think of you, I always think of him because you had kind of similar careers in that you're high picks from SC and did well in the NFL.
Well, I was fortunate to go to USC and fortunate to follow a lot of great offensive linemen. And you had Ron Yeary, you had Brad Buddy, you had Anthony Munoz,
yeah,
and Bruce Matthews. I mean, you talk about some of the great all-timers. And so to be a kind of follow that lineage and tried to hold my own and not embarrass those guys too much. And hope I did okay job.
Yeah, who was the tailback when you were there?
So we had kind of tailback by committee. We had tailback committee, not one that really stood out. We had, interesting thing when I was at SC, we had offensively, better receivers than anything. We had Keyshawn Johnson. Yeah, Johnny Morton, first-round draft pick. Curtis Conway, a first-round draft pick. So we had a bunch of really good wide receivers. So it was a little bit different. It wasn't quite tailback you when I was there. I mean, we had some good players, but we had great receivers.
You watched the practice today, and Mike Zimmer told me this morning that they had he took 12 of his players to meet with 12 of the Jacksonville players beforehand so they wouldn't get into fights. And somebody asked me why they always get in practice these fights. Well, number one is you don't get a penalty. I mean, there's no 15-yard penalty or suspension, so these guys know that the punishment isn't so much. But it was pretty well run this afternoon. There was no real no skirmishes, nothing to really report on that way.
No, it was kind of boring.
Yeah.
I'm joking. There's no reason to fight. I mean, now, I'd be a hypocrite if I said I didn't get in fights when I played. But you're not going to hurt anybody but yourself. You've got all those pads on, break a hand or something, and it just slows down the practice. And the other thing is, it's not like the old days, too, when you'd be out there twice a day against, another team. That's when you really start hating each other. So they ran it well. You got two good football teams, two really good defenses. I mean, I watched them practice today. I think the defense has kind of probably won the day on both sides of the ball for both teams. But I think both teams are going to be pretty good this year. Wouldn't shock me if they met up in the Super Bowl at the end of the year.
They sure could. I mean, they've got that kind of makeup. What's happened in Jacksonville there where you guys have made this climb in the last couple of years? We don't see Jacksonville very often. The Jaguars are not on our radar much. How have they built this? It seems like really quickly, but I'm sure it was more than that.
Well, it wasn't the last couple of years we've been good. It was last year. And the reason that no one was paying attention to us is because for about a decade, we were not a good football team. And they kind of, about 4 years ago, they decided just to scrap the whole thing and start fresh and go young and build through the draft. And then they did that and got some really good draft picks. And then the last 2 years, they spent a lot of money in free agency And unlike a lot of teams, they hit in free agency. I mean, they got guys who were good players, and they continue to be good players and better players for the Jaguars. You have Calais Campbell, my opinion, should have been Defensive Player of the Year last year, was runner-up. He was all pro. You get A.J. Boye, a free agent from Houston, ends up being all pro, second-team all pro. You know, Marcel Darius, Malik Jackson. These are quality Pro Bowl players who you got, and they stayed at that level. Plus your draft picks with Jalen Ramsey and Telvin Smith and Miles Jack. I mean, they did an outstanding job of drafting and building this team, and now you see the fruit of it.
You know, you had Gus Bradley there for a while as head coach, and he's a small town guy about, you know, an hour south of the Eagan Complex is, and he went to North Dakota State, so he didn't stay in the Minnesota pipeline that way. But we didn't know that much about him, and all of a sudden he surfaced as a defensive coordinator at Seattle and then on to Jacksonville. What was Gus like in his time there?
Well, I'm biased. Gus is one of my best friends in this world, so
right.
I'm very, very biased. He is a very good football coach. Didn't work out in Jacksonville. A lot of reasons, no reason to even get into it, but it just didn't work out, and they needed to make a move. And it was hard for me to even say that because he was such a good friend of mine. But he's one heck of a football coach, doing a great job in Los Angeles Chargers as a defense coordinator. Wouldn't surprise me one bit if he was a head coach again. But it just didn't work out. And now Doug Marrone's in, and Tom Coughlin came back. And they've done a great job the last year plus. Dave Caldwell, the GM, has been there for a while now. And he's really built this team. So they got a really good leadership in the front office. And the head coach has done a good job. And so it's a well-built team. And I think it really starts in Jacksonville with the owner. Shad Khan, the ownership, and his family who owns the team. Everything we do is first class. I mean, in fact, the son was out there touring the facility. Wouldn't shock me. I think they probably get the coaches and Tom Coughlin, everyone's a little envious of that facility, saying, hey, we need to get one of these in Jacksonville.
Well, what do they do when it heats up in training camp in Jacksonville? Do they go indoors, near conditioning? What do they do?
No. We're out in the heat, man. We have an indoor facility, but Doug Marrone, the head coach, is old school. He doesn't believe in taking it easy on those guys. They're in the heat, and they're out there. As long as the NFLPA allows them to be on the field, they get every second out of it. And so it's been a pretty grinding, grueling camp for those guys in the heat. And so this was a very nice break for all of us coming up here to Minnesota in this beautiful weather.
Tony, I got to tell you, though, when I talked to some of the vets that are still in the league, in the NFLPA, you mentioned all that stuff's pertinent to it. I said, what's changed the most? I was talking to Brian Robinson, Vikings defense fan. He said, easy. Training camp's a lot easier. Oh, did it drop off? Okay. We'll try to reconnect here with Tony Boselli. But Brian Robinson was asking that question today. I said, what's different about the NFL today as opposed to when you came into the league? It's simple. Training camp's a lot easier than it was. And they've got so many rules and so many regulations and mandate what you can and can't do in terms of hitting. Tony Boselli rejoins us. He dropped off for just a second there. But, Tony, I was just telling that I was talking to Brian Robinson, the oldest, most veteran player for the Vikings,
yeah.
And I said, what's the biggest difference between now and when you came into the league? And he said, well, for starters, training camp is a whole lot easier than it used to be. And I'm sure you could look at that and see it because the league and the Players Association and the union, they've gotten some rules and they're preventing injuries. And it is a whole lot different than when you came in 95.
No, I'm jealous. Our first camp,
yeah.
We had six weeks, 2 days.
Yep.
Five preseason games when we played in the Hall of Fame game. And then we thought the next year we had a break in 96. We only had 4 weeks of 2 days, and that's pads every day. And so these guys, I mean, listen, it's a different game. I'm not mad at them.
No.
It's just a different game, and you can argue whether it's better, you know, the play's better or worse or whatever. It doesn't matter. It is what it is, and I think they're trying to be smart and take care of guys' bodies, and that's where they are today. So I laugh at them when they all start complaining about camp.
Last question for you. We know you got some dinner to go to and everything else. But when I talked to Mike Zimmer, he says that the toughest position to develop in the NFL now is offensive linemen because the college game is so much different than the pro game when you talk about an offensive lineman as opposed to any other position. Do you see that?
Yeah, the game's – I was talking today on the field. I mean, those guys have no clue what they're doing when they get out of college. Half of them can't even get in a three-point stand.
Yeah.
Everything's a spread. It's a very horizontal game. They don't know how to double team. They don't, you know, tight ends are barely in a three-point stand in college. It's such a different game. for the most part. Some colleges still run pro style. I think it's a really hard transition. That coupled with the fact that the CBA does not allow much time in the off season for those guys to get to work in. So, yeah, it's tough. I think it's one of the reasons why you see at the beginning of the season, you sloppy play. And if a team loses a couple offensive linemen, it's hard to replace them. It's just not the depth like they used to have when I played.
Tony, thank you so much. We'll see you out there tomorrow. Have a good time tonight.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Tony Boselli from the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was a good one. Those great big offensive linemen that come through USC. Matt Khalil was one of those. Remember, they came and played Minnesota. Remember, Rick Spielman was down in the field. He was eyeballing players. I had no idea that he was going to draft Matt Khalil a few months later. But they came to town and beat they played them twice. They played the Gophers. Lane Kiffin was the coach. And Lane, of course, for Bloomington Jefferson High School, had landed at USC after a stint as an assistant there, head coach of the Raiders, and on and on and on. And they came in and beat the Gophers a pretty good football game. I mean, it wasn't a blowout. Brewster was the coach at the time. It might even be Brewster's last season or second to last season. And but it was just fun. I can remember to be at TCF Bank Stadium and to see USC on the field. I don't know what it was, but they'd come to many, many years ago with Marcus Allen. They had come, and there's a legendary story that before my time about O.J. Simpson coming and running wild against them. But they came in with that team, and Khalil was the best player on the team, I guess. And they beat the Gophers, but it was so cool to see USC come out there because you're so used to in the non-conference seeing, you know, what we're going to see this year, New Mexico State, Fresno State, et cetera, et cetera. And to see a big-time team come out there. I think Jerry Kill's first year, their first game might have been at USC, as I recall, or one of their first games anyway. But it was just fun to see that on the field. We were just talking, the Big Ten Network is doing some of their, they pick one school, and then they play a number of highlight games, I guess, from that school's history. And they're playing Wisconsin and USC now, and et cetera, et cetera. And, I mean, it's always bad when you're playing repeats, but Hammer and I were talking about if you're going to do that for the Gophers and dialed up, say, over the last 10 years, big wins, if it comes within the confines of the Big Ten, I mean, you are really hard-pressed in football to come up with a significant series of significant wins. I voted for when they beat Washington State in the bowl game, when Tracy Clays took that team in there after they'd been decimated by suspensions and everything else. And Washington State threw the ball, and they didn't have any defensive backs left, and he came up with a game plan and beat and won the football game. He's coaching at Washington State now. And then in Jerry Kill's era, when they went to Michigan and won, it wasn't a great Michigan team, but they still won at Michigan.
It was a hoax final year, and the Wolverines just looked disorganized.
Yeah,
on the
exactly.
Field.
It was his final year. Yeah.
And the Gophers looked like they were Michigan of years past.
Exactly. They owned them.
Did it.
But we started talking about, okay, let's go over some more big wins.
They won Floyd to Rosedale later that year in 2014 over Iowa, and they crushed them. I think it was 51-14.
Yeah, and that was so was that the year they went to the bowl game against Missouri the same year?
It was, yes.
Yeah, so that was Jerry Kill's best year.
Yeah, they got to the Capital One Bowl down in Orlando that year.
Yeah, the next year is when he ended up retiring in the middle of the season.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got that, and then they won at Nebraska also that year.
I forgot about that one, yes.
Yeah, and that was a big win at Nebraska. Now, they beat Nebraska last year, but that's a bad Nebraska team.
Well, I remember they beat Nebraska back in 2013, I think, also at home. That was their first win over them since 84.
And that was when Coach Kill was up in the box.
Yeah, that was a big one for the program, too.
One of the greatest moments I've ever seen.
Yes.
The game's going to end, and they're going to beat Nebraska at home, right? And we walk down to get on the field to capture the moment, because mm-hmm. we know the fans are going to jump the field. And as I'm walking out in front, and behind me I hear somebody yell my name. Mike, and I look back, and it's Rebecca Kill.
Okay.
And she's with a group of people. Well, that group was her family. Now, you got to remember that year, she had a brother come up and had a heart attack at the game.
Okay.
And they got him to the hospital for a few days, and he died.
Oh.
So it had been and then you had Jerry Kill's situation. I'm not positive the same year, blah, blah, blah. But Jerry's up in the box. And we're down getting ready to go out, and she comes up to me and she says, "There is a God, you know?" and she's a devout person, spiritually. Yes. She was just saying what she felt. But we're standing there looking at the field, knowing the Gophers are going to win. No one in the stands knows that Jerry Kill's wife is and his family are there.
Yes.
And the students are chanting, Jerry, mm-hmm. Jerry, Jerry, completely unaware and oblivious to the fact that his family is
yes.
right there. And she's got tears in her eyes. I mean, you couldn't help but get emotional. And to see, these students uplifting this family without even realizing mm-hmm. it. And the final gun goes off, and they mob the field, and it was something to see.
What a great moment.
What a great moment, you know. And you realize why coaches keep coming back and why he coached for so long, mm-hmm. as long as he could. Because a moment like that
yes.
will carry you through
a
whole lot of dark times, and
it will
make you go move to places you never thought you'd move to and take jobs you never thought you'd take. Because a moment like that is so pinnacle and so far above what the human mind can even conceive, I think, that you don't know how moved you are by it. And to see that and observe it up close, that was a I get chills just thinking about it and talking about it. There's Jerry, Jerry, and Rebecca's got tears coming down her eyes, and her family and his family are there, and they're about the same. And wow, that was something. And that those are those moments, and you know when you go, okay, this sports is different than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
In life,
it's more
you know?
Than that.
Yeah. Take a break. Come back. Sports to the Max at WCCO. Terrence Newman had a good scrimmage today against Jacksonville. He is a veteran for the Minnesota Vikings, and I had a chance to visit with him and go a little one-on-one. He's one of the Vikings leaders in the secondary, Terrence Newman.
Training camp, training camp, training camp. You've seen enough of them. Is this one different just because of the facility, or how's it feel?
I mean, it's training camp. Like, once you get out here on the field, I mean, the facility and everything, that doesn't matter. You're out on the grass. You're practicing with your guys, trying to get better.
Every practice is what? I mean, you're trying to get a little bit better. You've learned this as a veteran. What do you tell the young guys in terms of each practice?
I mean, you got to work on your technique. That's something that is it's different once you get here because you've done something in college for so long, and then you might have a different technique here, and obviously you have to learn the scheme. So the biggest thing is to learn, you know, what to do and how to do it.
Your front seven's pretty good in front of you. What does that do for a defensive back?
I mean, obviously – we got some guys that can really get after the quarterback, man. And I think when you've got a defensive front like that, you know, it takes pressure off your secondary for sure. But we got some playmakers back there as well, you know, Harrison and Dejo and Trey and, you know, Xavier. So just give those guys a little bit of time, man, and they're back there in the quarterback's face. You know, oftentimes rushing them to make different throws, and that's definitely beneficial for us.
Did you have any doubt that you were going to be back next year playing football after last season? Or?
Zero.
You knew you were coming back to play?
I had no doubt.
And you wanted to? I mean, the fires burned just as strong now as it is.
Yeah.
How much fun is it today, now that you know the game this well and you know, you're probably not surprised by anything?
I mean, it's more fun, but I also take on a different role, too, trying to help some of the young guys. And so I get to see, you know, from a certain perspective, you know, the aspect where I get to help, you know, some of the younger guys. And yeah, you got so many DBs here. You got two coaches for the DBs. So, you know, I can just kind of lend some knowledge to some of the younger guys. And it's kind of cool for me.
Yeah, that's kind of fun, isn't it? It looks like, at least with the way you're doing it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's...
What's the most asked question you get from a rookie?
I mean, there is no most asked. I mean, it's just different stuff with the defense. So, you know, there's different things and terminology. So that's pretty much, you know, all we talk about, really.
Terrence Newman, this is a good question. The people talk about declining ratings, declining attendance for the NFL. It's still very strong, etc. Do you think, in some respects, that politics, for some people, has supplanted sports? That politics and the gamesmanship in politics and following politics has become a lot like following a team, where you root for whoever your person is, and you follow them on a daily basis, much the same way you would a baseball team. Do you think that the media, has created an environment where people are now following politics, and they're using that time more than they're following sports or a team? Because when you go home at night, I'm just wondering if there's not a shift in that there's a huge or a significant delegation of people that when they get in front of their TV, given a choice, rather than watch the game of the week, if there's not a significant segment of the population saying, I want to watch Fox and MSNBC and CNN to see what my man Donald Trump said today, or to see what my man fill in the blank, whoever it is that what Senator Schumer said today. Do you think that politics has become so significant that it's taking a bite out of sports from almost an entertainment standpoint? I have long wondered this. And in 2016, when they had those debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I'm an ardent sports fan, et cetera, but that was must-see TV on a Sunday night, and I wasn't going to watch any NFL game. I wanted to see that. I wanted to feel it. I wanted to see the reaction. I wanted all that stuff. I wanted some post-game analysis. I wanted all of it. And I wonder if that's happening, if we're seeing a shift to an extent in that we've created a new sport, and the sport is politics, and we're following it the same way we follow sports teams. We get angry, we get upset, we get happy, blah, blah, blah. And to a large extent, it's because Donald Trump has found a way to stimulate the masses. He has found a way to stimulate you. Whether you like him or not, he stimulates you. He makes you happy. He makes you sad. He makes you bewildered. But he has found a way to tug at your emotion, and he knows it. He's a master at it. He does it without you knowing it. He upsets you. He angers you without you even realizing that he's laughing at you for getting angry about it. Do you think that's become a sport by itself? It's a good question, and it's a fair question. 612-989-9226, 651-989-9226. Do some of you start to find yourself gravitating towards, with your free time, politics over sports, just because you find it to be invigorating, just because you find some of those that same adrenaline rush that you get in sports? That's a really good question. 651-989-9226, 612-989-9226. Is that taking the place of what used to be? And do you think in a large, to a certain extent, this is really healthy for the country, because that means we're paying attention to things that we always said sports isn't important, you know, but policy and politics are. So is that a good thing? That politics are becoming a form of entertainment the same way sports are? 612-989-9226, 651-989-9226. See, because you ask this generation, you say, you need to be up to speed on politics. And then they get crazy about it. And then you say, well, people are going too far with this politics stuff. Either you're vested or you're not, folks. 612-989-9226, sports and politics to the max. Stay with us.
Radio.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Glenn Campbell. Nobody could do it like him. I don't know what his politics were. But I do believe that we've seen, I don't know if it's a seismic shift, but certainly a shift where this population of ours has gotten so engaged in politics, which is what we've wanted all along. And then some people say, well, but they take it too seriously. Well, either you're in or you're not, folks. Either you got passion or you don't. Can't have it both ways. And I truly believe that it's taking the place to an extent of sports. In other words, people that are sports fans are spending more time in politics, but they're accessing the same faculties. They're accessing this. It's for the same source of satisfaction or adrenaline rush or whatever it is that they get from sports, and they're doing it without even realizing it. I can't tell you how many guys I know that are big sports fans. And they'll tell me, like, I know guys one guy was telling me he watches Fox News a lot. And he says, I turn over to MSNBC just to get pissed off. Now, I don't understand that from a psychological standpoint, but I know what he means, right? You don't know why, but you want somebody to anger you. And we crave that in a way. Because once they anger us, then we can go try to beat them at something. And I think this is significant, and I think it's significant to the sports world. 612-989-9226, 651-989-9226. Let's go to Mike on line one. Mike, what do you think?
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me on. I'm intrigued by your question, because I never used to follow politics very closely until the 2016 general election, but I have been almost consumed by it since then, because I do like Trump. I like what he's trying to do, and the guy is entertaining. I mean, it's the best soap opera on TV.
It is. And when he was involved in those debates with Hillary Clinton, I mean, you had to be there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when I wouldn't have even thought about switching over to debate or even watch election night and everything. But I can tell you this much. Since then, I have totally changed. I mean, I'm still a sports fan, but that's on the back burner. What I don't like is that getting politics involved in sports, because I think most of us like to just watch sports just for the pure joy of watching sports, and I don't like seeing the politics involved in sports.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of us look at sports as a safe haven that gets us away from that for a day.
Exactly.
And it is too bad that it's moved in that direction right now. But I also think there are times when those two worlds can't help but collide, you know?
Well, there's times I agree with them that there's going to be some crossover, but I just think it kind of takes away from the joy of sports when it gets to be too nasty. And in politics, I can see that part of the game and everything, but I think most of us, like you said, would prefer our sports just for the enjoyment.
Yep, for sure. That's why we do it. Mike, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Mike.
Does anybody else feel that way? That you find yourself in this world of the internet and everything else? It's kind of like, and I can remember going back to 2016, and John Williams was doing our afternoon show at the time, and he says, you know, I hate to say it, but the first thing I do when I get up in the morning, as I go over to the computer, and I put Trump News in there to see if he said anything the night before, see if he tweeted anything the night before, see if there's anything I need to know about it, because I was so curious about what he had done. And that's not that much different than the way you follow a baseball team, right? You get up, and if you didn't know, you check the score. Any highlights to it? Anybody hit a home run? Anybody? And I truly think that in this world, and where we sit right now, you're seeing that from people, and I think they think it without thinking about it. They think it the same way. They think about sports the same way they think about politics, and they gravitate to politics for the same reasons they gravitate to sports. 612-989-9226, 651-989-9226. I'll be filling in on Friday, by the way, for John Hines. And I just got a text confirming. I don't like to do these a couple days out because you never know with these big stars if they're going to show up or not. That's one of the things that you sit on eggshells all the time, because you book somebody, and until you hear their voice, you know, I just saw Hammer right there. He booked Tony Baselli, and he gets a sigh of relief when he hears the guy's voice, right? So I don't even know if I should say this because it's one of those that until I hear the voice on Friday at a little after 10, I won't know if it's true or not. But I have I don't know if I should say it or not. I have a tentative confirmation for Friday at 10:05 when I film for John Hines. Boy, do I pull the trigger on this one or not? Or am I just setting myself up for embarrassment in case he stiffs me? Well, I'll say it. Ron Shira has just confirmed that at 10:05 on Friday, he will join me from, he will be out at, he's doing an event that day, a game fair, but he has confirmed to me that he will join us at 10:05. So, now I got to live with the anxiety the next 2 days going, pick up the phone. But hopefully, I got it in text here, but I mean, when you're dealing with people that get to a certain level, you don't make the rules. Okay. You just hope. You ask them, you politely, and if they say no, you understand, and they probably will. But if they say yes and you hit on it, whoa, I won't be sleeping the night or tomorrow. But Ron Shira is a tentative. I mean, if you want to tell folks, go ahead. But remember, I said tentative because he's got people, and I think he's got a meeting that day with his agent that represents him for that Kinetico commercial. In terms of residuals, the one where he and Laura are in the kitchen and talking about water, and then all of a sudden the doorbell rings and Ron gives a very surprised look. But that's tentatively what we've got going on Friday. Do you think politics is taking the place of sports for many people? 612-989-9226, 651-989-9226. I think the answer is, yeah, I think there's a lot of people that spend more time in politics now that used to spend that time in sports. 651-989-9226, 612-989-9226. And do you find it to be a more interesting place to spend your time? Is there something about it that you find more interesting, more enthralling, more empowering than watching a game? 651-989-9226. Brian Robinson plays for the Minnesota Vikings. We talked.
Brian, it's another training camp, but it's different because of the facility and everything else. How has that affected? How has it been different? What effect has it had?
Well, I think guys are a little bit more excited. I mean, anytime you have a new facility like this, it adds a little bit of excitement. But guys are getting along. You know, we get to sit in that locker room and talk during lunchtime and stuff like that. So the camaraderie definitely is up. And just being able to sit with the guys, that's probably the best thing about this whole new facility is being able to hang out with the guys.
And that cafeteria's got a pretty nice overlook of the ponds and the stadium. Huh?
Yeah, man, and our chefs are doing a great job, man. They're cooking some great food up there. I made a joke the other day, you know, it's like a five-star restaurant here, so it's been great, man.
How is this league different than when you came into it in terms of just that? The NFL keeps getting bigger and bigger, but what you've got the best perspective on this team. What have you seen?
Training camp's easier. Mm-hmm. Still hard, but it's easier. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the teams are bigger at the beginning of the season. You know, you start with 90 versus we used to start with 75, I think it was. So, you know, there's been a lot that has changed. But, I mean, obviously you can see that the money flow into this league is unreal. And, you know, I think it's just one of those where the fan base is growing. And, you know, it just adds another element to this league.
Did you ever come close to hanging it up in the off season and saying I've had enough, or did you always have the fire and know that you wanted to come back and keep playing?
A little bit of both. I mean, I knew I wanted to play, but I just had to make the right decision for me and my family and what was right. And so, yeah, I mean, retirement was definitely on the table, but it was definitely one of those that was kind of not at the forefront. It was at the back, on the back burner. And I didn't really want to retire, but I knew this was a place I wanted to be. And everything worked out okay.
Your defensive line, you play on some good defensive lines. Is this one as good as you played on talent-wise? Because it looks like you got a lot of depth.
I mean, I don't know. It's way too early to tell. I mean, we'll see as the season goes on. I mean, right now I think the sky's the limit for us. But at the end of the day, we have to put it on tape each and every Sunday. And so we haven't even played a game yet. We've been just out here grinding, just trying to get better each and every day. So we'll see what happens.
How can you tell in training camp where you're at? Or can you tell?
No, you can never tell. I mean, in training camp, obviously, you're just trying to work on your craft. You're trying to do, you know, what's right within the defense, and you really can't tell until you start getting into games.
What you know, preseason, when you get through them, you've seen so many of them. Do you know coming out of preseason how good you're going to be or not necessarily?
No, man. I've been part of teams that we've been 4-0 and didn't do too well in the season, and I've also been part of teams where, you know, we pretty much bombed almost every preseason game and ended up being a pretty good football team. So, you can never tell. I mean, preseason is so different. You know, you scheme different during the season than you do during the preseason. So it's just totally different ball game.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian,
as a
veteran. No, thank you, Mike. I really enjoyed the interview. Take a break. Come back. Sports to the Max at WCCO. Welcome back. I think about that song. Sometimes coaches always, a lot of times coaches that work their way to the top end up feeling that way because they move around and they spend so much time. We mentioned the euphoria that comes with it, but many times there's an expense to be paid, and it's a pretty steep one because your family. In general, a lot of coaches' kids end up being really good kids, I think because of the values, et cetera, and occasionally there are some problems. But today there was a very poignant moment before the Vikings scrimmage with Jacksonville. Mike Zimmer was out on the field, and Tony Sperano, the late Tony Sperano, of course, passed away untimely 3 weeks ago of a heart attack right before the season. The Vikings offensive line coach, his widow, was at the scrimmage today. And her son, Tony's son, is a tight ends coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So there was this poignant shot, you'll see it on the news tonight on Channel 4, of Mike Zimmer with Tony Sperano's widow and Tony's son out on the field. It was pretty cool. And one can only imagine the emotion and everything else that's still raw and real for them as they go through all of this. They try to manage their way through it. So the question was, is politics starting to take the place of sports? And I talked about how people get so angry and blah, blah, blah about politics. And I've got a text here that says, well, can't you just get pissed off enough with the Twins? Touché. Here's another one. I think sports are completely different than our politics these days. Politics are more like a reality freak show. I find myself being drawn in more now. Okay. Hammer, you've never really gone down that road, have you?
I don't think I have. I've come close a couple times.
You stayed pretty much sports, right?
Pretty much. Although I will say during the 2008 election.
2008?
Back when Obama and McCain were going
in. Oh, my God, it was history in the making. You know, I mean, how could you not be sucked
in? I was there dialed into that.
If Barack Obama wins it, he's the first African-American president. I mean, this is historical. This is, you know, no matter where you sit in politics, it certainly was trending that way. How could you not try to take this in and try to, you know, say, whoa. And they tell us how rotten our country is. We tell each other that, and you're just, here we go. We just voted in an African-American president in the midst of whatever racial turmoil, whatever. People saw through that and said, this is the best man for the job.
And plus you had, like, the housing bubble bursting.
Oh, yeah. Like the markets were going down. All going down at once, right? So, that was still in Bush's watch. But, yeah. I mean, of course, Obama was a senator, and they had to come back. And, what's the name of that movie they did on that on HBO?
The Big Short.
No, different one.
Oh, different one you're thinking of?
Oh, gosh. Too Big to Fail.
Too Big to Fail, yes.
Wonderful HBO presentation on that and how it went down in the, you know, in the final hours.
So that got really me back into the politics game. You know, I did a lot when I was younger. I don't know if you knew this, but I actually campaigned for Bush 41 back in my hometown.
You did?
My family and I went past the pamphlets and flyers and everything.
Because that was...
That was our guy.
Did you go to the caucus or anything or what?
No, we didn't do that because it wasn't anywhere near us. But, you know, just my dad got lined up with somebody there with the Bush campaign, and we passed out flyers for—
And you became an extension for them.
Exactly, yes.
How did you enjoy that?
I liked it a lot.
Did you talk to a lot of people then along the way?
I did. I met some people that were not big fans of him and some that were big fans of him.
But you heard them both out, right?
I did.
Yep, and you weren't quick to judge?
As a 10-year-old kid, it was very eye-opening.
Oh, you're only 10 at the time?
I was only 10.
Wow. Yeah, it's a great way to live and learn, though, isn't it?
So that got me started, and then, of course, you know, I started getting into sports, so I focused more on that than politics. Yeah. Like, you know, I pay attention to the elections and everything.
Yep.
But back around 2008, when Obama got elected, I started listening more to politics. And now with the Trump era, you can't help but watch.
No, it's entertaining at minimum.
It's like you said, when I wake up every morning, I check on Twitter to see what did he say.
Think about that.
It's like what Williams does. What do he say? Like, what's going on in the world?
Yeah, because I know it's going to be a headline, so, you know, and he knows it's going to be a headline.
Yeah.
And he plays these people like a fiddle. God.
And working in this business, you have to pay attention. You have to have an idea what's going on. You can't ignore it.
Right. And usually you can't miss it. But, I mean, who'd ever thought that you'd be checking on a presidential communication every day?
So I see your point. I think there are similarities there.
Yeah. And, I mean, that time would have been spent doing something else. Dave Hartman, Amateur Baseball, next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.